Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 422, titled True Lies, More About Conan the Republican. This is being recorded on August 25th of the year 2003. We're talking about former bodybuilder and movie star Arnold Schwarzenegger, who now, of course, is running for governor of California. It is an interesting state of affairs for someone in the world of, so to speak, political consumerism, because Arnold Schwarzenegger does not have much of a political resume. He is not a politician per se, and has never held office before, which is interesting in and of itself. He is, however, an individual who has some very, very interesting connections, stretching from the Nazi background of his father, some circumstantial evidence suggesting that his own views, despite his support for the Wiesenthal Institute and the Museum of Tolerance, suggesting that at least his own superficial behavior has been very flirtatious with at least the iconographic aspects of Nazism. More disturbing is his support, which he has never recanted, for Kurt Waldheim. And also bear in mind the fascinating aspect where his father, supposedly just a small-town police chief in Austria in the post-war period, was able to prevail on the Austrian army to lower the minimum age for a tank driver from 21 to 18 so his son could drive a tank. The fact that, at least by Arnold's own account, he was able to park a tank at one point, forget to put the brake on, it rolled into a river, yet he wasn't disciplined. And in something that is somewhat reminiscent of George W. Bush, in order to compete in his first German bodybuilding contest in Stuttgart, he went AWOL from the Austrian army and yet was not disciplined. Anybody knows anything about military affairs, that dog won't hunt, and is a little bit like the retrograde motion of the planets in connection with Copernicus and his revision, successful and important revision of the operant model of the universe. Bear in mind Spitfire, spitfirelist.com, various CDs and tapes available from Spitfire. Their website is equipped with detailed annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs. Look in For the Record of 233 and up for the annotated versions. And also, bear in mind WFMU. WFMU.org has programs streaming. It will soon be up in its entirety. And there's a longer URL linked to both the Spitfire website and WFMU.org/Dave Emery that has the For the Record programs available on Real Audio. We're going to turn to an article from CommonDreams.org. This was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This article is by Jason Leopold, and again, it can be found at the website CommonDreams.org. This is titled Arnold Kenley, George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Gray Davis. It's from Sunday, August 17th of 2003. We were talking about the destabilization of California and the fact that it was California's power crisis that has contributed, along with the economic malaise that has embraced and engulfed most all of the states, which are in the worst shape they've been in since the Great Depression. Arnold Schwarzenegger, again, supposedly an everyman who has basically risen from nowhere to become the potential leader of the folk in this country. Arnold Schwarzenegger actually has done some very, very serious networking. And far from being someone who is going to turn the special interests out of Sacramento. In fact, there's every indication that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a tool and a willing tool and a knowing tool of all of these special, or of the very special interests he professes to be against. This is in some ways reminiscent of the rhetoric used by Hitler, who professed to be opposed to the international financiers and to the bastions of economic power in Germany. In fact, despite the fact that he drew on the methodology of Trotsky and to a certain extent Stalin, He was, in the end, an exponent of those very same interests. Schwarzenegger, too, is using a little bit of the common man Fuhrer principle, at least in terms of rhetoric. He's presenting himself as being representative of the little guy. He ain't the representative of the little guy, but his popular appeal, again, bear in mind Serpent's Walk, using the opinion-forming media to achieve control. Arnold Schwarzenegger, in fact, has done some very interesting networking here. Again, Arnold, Ken Lay, George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Gray Davis, bear in mind the role of the power crisis in California in helping to destabilize the state. For the record, 280 and, for the record, 420 are about the destabilization of California and the electricity crisis. This article by Jason Leopold reads in part as follows. Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't talking. The Hollywood action film star and California's GOP gubernatorial candidate in the state's recall election has been unusually silent about his plans for running the Golden State. He hasn't yet offered up a solution for the state's $38 billion budget deficit, an issue that largely got more than 1 million people to sign a petition to recall Governor Gray Davis. More important, however, Schwarzenegger still won't respond to questions about why he was at the Peninsula Hotel in Beverly Hills 2 years ago, where he, former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon, and junk bond king Michael Milken met secretly with former Enron chairman Kenneth Lay, who was touting a plan for solving the state's energy crisis. Again, Schwarzenegger and Kenneth Lay. Skipping down. While Schwarzenegger, Reardon, and Milken listened to Lay's pitch, Governor Davis pleaded with President George Bush to enact much-needed price controls on electricity sold in the state, which skyrocketed to more than $200 per megawatt hour. Davis said that Texas-based energy companies were manipulating California's power market, charging obscene prices for power and holding consumers hostage. Bush agreed to meet with Davis at the Century Plaza Hotel in West Los Angeles on May 29, 2001, 5 days after Lay met with Schwarzenegger to discuss the California power crisis. At the meeting, Davis asked Bush for federal assistance, such as imposing federally mandated price caps to rein in soaring energy prices. But Bush refused, saying California legislators designed an electricity market that left too many regulatory restrictions in place, and that's what caused electricity prices in the state to skyrocket. It was up to the governor to fix the problem, Bush said. However, Bush's response appears to be part of a coordinated effort launched by Lay to have Davis shoulder the blame for the crisis. It worked. According to recent polls, a majority of voters grew increasingly frustrated with the way Davis handled the power crisis. Schwarzenegger has used the energy crisis and missteps by Davis to bolster his standing with potential voters. While Davis took a beating in the press, some energy companies ran attack ads against the governor. Lay used his political clout to gather support for deregulation. A couple of weeks before Lay met with Schwarzenegger in May of 2001, the PBS News program Frontline interviewed Vice President Dick Cheney, whom Lay met with privately a month earlier. Cheney was asked by a correspondent from Frontline whether energy companies were acting like a cartel and using manipulative tactics to cause electricity prices to spike in California. No, Cheney said during the Frontline interview, the problem you had in California was caused by a combination of things. An unwise regulatory scheme, because they didn't really deregulate. Now they're trapped from unwise regulatory schemes, plus not having addressed the supply side of the issue. They've obviously created major problems for themselves and bankrupted PGE in the process. Skipping down. The 90-minute secret meeting Lay convened took place inside a conference room at the Peninsula Hotel. Lay and other Enron representatives at the meeting handed out a 4-page document to Schwarzenegger, Reardon, and Milken titled Comprehensive Solution for California, unquote, which called for an end to federal and state investigations into Enron's role in the California energy crisis and said consumers should pay for the state's disastrous experience with deregulation through multi-billion rate increases. Another bullet point in the four-page document said, get deregulation right this time. California needs a real electricity market, not government takeovers, unquote. The irony of that statement is that California's flawed power market design helped Enron earn more than $500 million in 1 year, a tenfold increase in profits from a previous year, and its coordinated effort in manipulating the price of electricity in California, which other power companies mimicked, cost the state close to $70 billion and led to the beginning of what is now the state's $38 billion budget deficit. The power crisis forced dozens of businesses to close down or move to other states, where cheaper electricity was in abundant supply, and greatly reduced the revenue California relied heavily upon. Lay asked the participants to support his plan and lobby the state legislature to make it a law. It's unclear whether Schwarzenegger held a stake in Enron at the time or if he followed through on Lay's request. His spokesman, Rob Stutzman, hasn't returned numerous calls for comment about the meeting. For Schwarzenegger and the others who attended the meeting, associating with Enron, particularly Ken Lay, the disgraced chairman of the high-flying energy company during the peak of California's power crisis in May of 2001, could be compared with meeting Osama bin Laden after September 11th to understand why terrorism isn't necessarily a heinous act. A person who attended the meeting at the Peninsula, which this reporter wrote about 2 years ago, said Lay invited Schwarzenegger and Reardon because the two were being courted in 2001 as GOP gubernatorial candidates. Interesting. So again, networking is the key term here, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is everything but the man of the people and the opponent of the special interests he professes to be. I would note that in terms of assessing Schwarzenegger, there are a lot of very unpleasant aspects. I personally don't care what the guy did in bed or with whom or when or how many times or what substances he ingested. That is, of course, something that would be very much of interest to the conservative Christian community that are a key element of the Republican Party. It isn't something I particularly care about because it's not really politically relevant. But what is politically relevant is Arnold Schwarzenegger's character. And Schwarzenegger is someone whose character I think could be best described as Machiavellian. This is a guy who is very intelligent, very, very far-sighted, and very PR conscious in certain respects. If he's going to stick it to you, Schwarzenegger will lead you in the opposite direction and then will stick it to you after that. In fact, even in his handling of the publicity anticipating his throwing his hat into the ring, characteristically, if one examines Schwarzenegger's history, he led people with what in football is called a misdirection play. His aides were announcing that he probably was not going to be running for a governor, and this was not something that he was probably going to do, that his family was against it, and yet, surprise, surprise, not surprising to people who are familiar with Schwarzenegger, he did in fact announce his candidacy. This is something that Schwarzenegger is expert at doing, namely misleading people and then using psychological warfare to undermine them and gain triumph. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, August 15th of 2003, in which Chronicle movie critic Mick LaSalle discussed the documentary which launched Arnold Schwarzenegger's media career, namely Pumping Iron, and how the film itself has some very interesting aspects, reveals some very interesting aspects of Schwarzenegger's personality. And I would add that these are absolutely relevant if one is to make an intelligent decision about this man as a political candidate. If he were just a film star, it would be irrelevant, but this is absolutely relevant for someone who is going to be representing, quote, the people, unquote. Chronicle 8/15/2003, Mick LaSalle, after discussing various aspects of the quasi-documentary Pumping Iron. This article is titled Film Probes Beyond Muscles, subtitled Pumping Iron Reveals Young, Brash, Even Scary Schwarzenegger. The article reads in part as follows. The genuinely creepy moments come two-thirds in. In one scene, he brags about missing his father's funeral in order to train for a competition. Talking about his chief rival, Lou Ferrigno, who went on to become TV's Incredible Hulk, Schwarzenegger tells the documentary camera, quote, "It doesn't matter if he's in shape or out of shape," unquote. He plans on messing with his mind, quote, "I will mix him up. He will come so ready, but the next morning, he will be ready to lose," unquote. Of this form of psychological manipulation, he says again, quoting, "All these things are available, and so if they're available, you might as well use them," unquote. He smiles, and at this point, he looks downright sinister. The movie shows him putting his strategy to work on the morning of the competition. He has breakfast with Ferrigno and Ferrigno's parents and subtly undermines his friend's confidence. Behind a mask of affability, he says that Ferrigno, who is huge, would have had a better chance of winning with another month's training, quote, "A month from now would be perfect for you," unquote. He asks Ferrigno, quote, "You look kind of worried today," unquote. He consoles Ferrigno in advance for losing. Finally, he gets up from the table and tells Ferrigno's father, quote, "Help him pump up. Calm him down," unquote. By the end of the breakfast, poor Ferrigno looks tied up in a psychological knot. At the competition, we see him posing as though apologetic about his body when he could just as easily have won. Even after the competition, Schwarzenegger, clearly having fun, continues his barrage, riding on a bus with Ferrigno and his folks, talking about how he plans to come to New York, eat spaghetti, and date Ferrigno's sister. Everything said with a smile, but the whole time he seems to be laughing at this guileless, sweet family. Frankly, it's almost sickening. Quote, "I was always dreaming about very powerful people, dictators and things like that," unquote, Schwarzenegger says of his childhood early in the film, again quoting, "Pumping iron makes it plain that this is one fellow who had the will to power at an early age." Indeed, Schwarzenegger had apparently confided to associates that he had planned on wielding power a long time ago. Now, of Schwarzenegger's Machiavellian character and his use of deliberately deceptive tactics, we're going to turn to, once again, Arnold, the unauthorized biography by Wendy Lee, published in hardcover in 1990 by Congdon and Weed. And more about Schwarzenegger's misleading of people who he plans to best in competition. In August of 1980, Arnold, now known in the bodybuilding community chiefly as CBS commentator and along with Jim Lorimer, producer of bodybuilding shows, attended the Miss Olympia contest at the Philadelphia Sheraton. Rick Wayne, there to cover the show for a Weeder magazine, interviewed Arnold afterward. Casually, Rick asked Arnold, who had now been retired from bodybuilding for 5 years, if he would ever consider making a comeback. "No," Arnold said firmly. "No amount of money could tempt me out of retirement," unquote. The only reason he'd been training, he told Rick, was that he was rehearsing for his part as bodybuilder Mickey Hargitay in the upcoming The Jane Mansfield Story. As an aside, he mentioned that he was planning to be in Australia for the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest, having just been signed by CBS as commentator for the event. Rick, ending the interview, believed every word that Arnold had said. Meanwhile, back on the West Coast, the reigning of Mr. Olympia, Frank Zane, had suffered a severe setback. 8 weeks before the contest, in which he expected to win his fourth Mr. Olympia title, Frank met with a terrible accident that almost killed him. After a spell in the hospital, on the verge of withdrawing from the contest, Frank approached Arnold and asked his advice. The accident, he said, had weakened him, interrupted his training, and left its mark. Should he still compete in the 1980 Mr. Olympia, or back out of the whole thing? Arnold, whom Frank habitually viewed as a friend and coach, thought for a moment, then said that he strongly believed that Frank should go to Australia and defend his Mr. Olympia title. As an afterthought, Frank, a man who was nobody's fool and had been Arnold's friend for more than 12 years, casually asked him if he planned to compete. No, said Arnold. He was going to Australia to do a documentary, to do commentary on the Olympia for CBS. That was all. Skipping ahead, 2 weeks before the 1980 Mr. Olympia, Arnold fell ill, losing 10 pounds. That didn't deter him from giving an interview to Austrian journalist Roman Schließer, who wrote about Arnold on a regular basis in his column, A Dabei, for the Viennese paper Die Kronen Zeitung. And if Menzer, Zane et al. Had subscribed to Die Kronen Zeitung and had been fortunate enough to understand German, they would not have been at all surprised by the events that took place subsequently in Sydney, Australia. For Arnold had quite openly revealed to Schließer, quote, On October 4th, the next Mr. Olympia will be chosen in Sydney. I'm a sports commentator for CBS television, but I'm doing it. I've trained for 6 weeks. I'm competing against Frank Zane, who was Mr. Olympia 3 times, but they will all cry when I win again, unquote. Schließer's article was published on September 28th, just 6 days before Arnold dropped his bombshell on the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest. Then it discusses some interesting psychological warfare that was waged against Mike Menzer, who was one of the competitors for Arnold Schwarzenegger in this particular contest. Skipping down, Frank Zane was Arnold's next target. A year later, Arnold described his tactics in an interview, quote, I knew Frank Zane would be tense at the moment of the competition because he hadn't laughed once in the last 6 weeks. So if I could crack him up with a good joke, all the laughter that he had stored up would come out in a torrent. So I prepared a joke and told it to him during the pre-judging. He cracked up so much that he leaned back and bent over, and of course the judges are always looking and making notes. They probably thought, he is not taking this seriously, unquote. After 5 years away from competition, it was wonderful to use psychological warfare again, unquote. In interviews filmed for The Comeback, conducted before and during the contest, Arnold would allege that he was insecure about stepping on stage for the first time in 5 years, but as he began to pose to the strains of Exodus, he enthused that nothing had changed. Waiting for the results, he was exultant, overflowing with enthusiasm and self-confidence, impatient to hear the outcome of the 1980 Mr. Olympia, convinced that he had won. As Dan Howard, one of the 1980 judges, says, quote, Arnold beats people before they go on stage, unquote. He was right. Although Arnold had trained for only 8 weeks while all the other contestants had trained for a year, he was nevertheless declared the 1980 Mr. Olympia. The audience went wild, though not in the way to which Arnold was accustomed. Paul Graham, executive producer of The Comeback with the help of film editor Jeff Bennett, didn't include in the film's soundtrack the subsequent eruption that greeted the announcement of the 1980 Olympia winner. In the words of an eyewitness, quote, the audience was furious, throwing things, swearing. A great chorus of rigged, rigged, rigged flared up. There's never been anything like it in any bodybuilding contest forever. Everyone in the place was booing Arnold, shouting, Bull, S blank, 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 and brawling in disgust. Arnold was enraged and went red in the face. Seething with anger, Arnold stormed out of the Sydney Opera House with a group of reporters in hot pursuit. Almost running toward the exit, he avoided answering their questions, tossing his head in a combination of anger and disdain. Close to the exit, he suddenly realized that Maria, far from being by, that's by the way, is Maria Shriver, currently his wife. Close to the exit, he suddenly realized that Maria, far from being by his side, was talking to some reporters behind him. According to Helmut Cernchich, at the top of his voice, Arnold screamed, quote, You stupid B.I. blank, 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 I'm waiting for you. Come here, unquote. Witnessing the scene, Helmut, who had known Arnold almost since he was a teenage misfit all those years ago in the athletic union, thought to himself, quote, This boy from Austria, who never had a penny, couldn't speak English, now knows someone from the Kennedy family and speaks to her like that. It was amazing. Unquote. And skipping down yet again, the attitudes towards Arnold's Olympia victory were many and varied. Some declared that he'd been out of shape, that his legs wouldn't even have won him a Mr. Australia title. Others felt that, compared to the rest of the consultants, yes, Arnold had been in shape, that he'd been far below his own best form, skipping down. Among the more serious allegations was the one claiming that all the judges in the 1980 Mr. Olympia either were Arnold's friends or had business relationships with him. And although no one accused the IFBB of having fixed the contest in Arnold's favor, it seemed as if the judges had had eyes only for him. And so again, one should note as we assess Arnold Schwarzenegger that this is a guy who definitely knows how to lead people in one direction and then snap back in the other, something that people should be very careful about as they assess him as a politician. Turning back to the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, August 15th of 2003, this is also a man who definitely likes to control his PR. And this also is something to evaluate as one assesses him as a potential governor of the sixth largest economy in the world. This is an article that also appeared in the Chronicle of 8/15/2003, and continuing from page D1, that Arnold was more candid before candidacy. Throughout his 33-year career, Schwarzenegger has been crafty in his dealings with the press. He's known for showing a warm demeanor toward journalists while hiring controlling publicists. As a result, Schwarzenegger's most sensational controversies have often been virtually ignored. The biggest bump in the road came after the publication of the 320-page Arnold, an unauthorized biography by Wendy Lee. The 1990 book explored in detail Schwarzenegger's alleged womanizing, abusive practical jokes, and admiration for Kurt Waldheim. The politician who had been accused of being a Nazi war criminal had been invited to the actor's wedding. But Lee and her book got very little coverage in mainstream U.S. media. A 1992 Spy magazine article on the actor describes his publicity machine as a heavy-handed group that resorted to threats to keep Lee's accusations from being widely repeated. According to the article, reporters were told that Schwarzenegger interviews would end after any mention of the book or its contents, and journalists at the Cannes Film Festival in 1990 were asked to sign documents promising not to ask the actor certain questions. So again, this is a person, although at least superficially charming in interviews, this is definitely someone who has issues with the press. Note, WFMU.org/Dave Emery has recent For the Record programs streaming on Real Audio. The balance of the For the Record series is available for download only on a linked URL, which is also linked to the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. In addition, there are detailed annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs available on the For the Record section of the Spit website. And I would note that although I've not written the description for the Record 421 yet, the picture that first put Arnold Schwarzenegger on my political radar screen from Sports Illustrated of 12/7/87, from an article titled Pecs Sell Ticks by Dan Geringer, that picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger posing for bodybuilding purposes against a mountain chain and very obviously giving the Hitler salute is now on a link to the FTR 421 description. This concludes For the Record 422, Side 2, titled True Lies, More About Conan the Republican, being recorded on August 25th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.